Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam. Dear listeners, Radio Sai continues its weekly presentation of the talking book version of Mr. Howard Moffat's highly acclaimed book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. The author was among the very early Westerners who came to Satya Sai Baba as a skeptic in 1964, and drawn by his enigma, he stayed for considerable periods of time near him in the next 6 years. During this period, he conducted extensive research and probing investigations into the Sai phenomena. He published his findings as the book that has become a classic of Sai literature, often considered the primer which introduced Sri Satya Sai Baba to millions round the world. This book was first published in 1971. Since then, it has been instrumental in drawing millions of seekers to the loving path of Satya Sai. These readings, dear listeners, are being aired every week, and if you wish to revisit a chapter at any time, you can do so at our website radiosai.org. So dear listeners, welcome now to Sai Baba, Man of Miracles by Howard Moffat.
Sai Ram, and welcome to Radio Sai's Talking Book Session. This is a presentation of select excerpts from Mr. Howard Moffat's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. We are now at Chapter 11, entitled Drift of Pinions. It begins with the following quote from Francis Thompson. Quote, "Not where the wheeling systems darken and are benumbed, conceiving sores. The drift of pinions would we hearken, beats at our own clay-shuttered doors." Unquote. In the last presentation, Mr. Moffat had mentioned that Mrs. Putt worshipped Swami as Lord Subramanyam. Let us today find out the reason for that.
In 1943, Mrs. Putt develops cancer of the uterus. Medical men advised an operation, though there was no certainty that this would be successful. Mr. Bhatt's widowed mother was staying with the young couple at the time, and she said to her son, "Lord Subramanyam cured your father of cancer without any operation. In the same way, he will cure your wife too." The old lady's faith was so tremendously strong that the young couple agreed to forego surgery and place themselves entirely in the hands of the household god. Pujas to Lord Subramanyam were intensified. The religious practices became even more strict and devout than before. The prayers more fervent and prolonged. Pujas were now carried mainly by Mr. Bhatt's mother, while the young wife remained in bed, growing gradually thinner and weaker. This went on for about 6 months. Then one night, while in a state of semi-sleep, the patient saw in the dim light from the moon a large cobra circling her bed. Alarmed, she switched on her bedside lamp and woke her mother-in-law, who was sleeping in the same room, her husband being absent on a business trip. No snake was found in the room, yet as soon as Mrs. Bhatt switched off the light, she saw the cobra again, going around the bed. Almost immediately, the snake took the form of Subramanyam, as she knew him by the portrait hanging in the puja room. He seemed to be floating above her. Then piercing her bosom with his velayudan, a kind of spear Subramanyam carries, he seemed to draw her away with him. Soon she found herself standing before him on the peak of a high, rocky hill. She knelt and touched his feet with her hands and forehead, and he began to talk to her. He asked her if she wanted to stay with him or go back to the world. She understood this to mean a choice between life and death. Thinking of her husband and young children and their need of her, she told Subramanyam that she wished to go back. There was further conversation, and finally Subramanyam said, You are cured of your illness and will soon grow strong. Throughout your life, I will protect you. Whenever you think of me, I'll be there. Now go back." "How?" she asked. He pointed to a long, winding, narrow staircase that had opened near their feet and led downward. She began to descend. Then there seemed to be a break in her consciousness, and she found herself back in bed in her own room, awake. Immediately, she woke her mother-in-law and told her about the vision. When her husband returned home, she told him as well. But she regarded the experience as sacred and did not make it known beyond the closest members of her family. From that night onward, she gained rapidly in strength, and there were no more signs of the cancer. Soon she was up and carrying on her normal life. Only, there was a difference. Now, in addition to her household duties and religious observances, she devoted herself to social welfare work among the poor and needy. God had given her back her life, and she was determined to use it fully in His service as best she knew how. It was 20 years later that Mr. and Mrs. Bhatt first heard of Satya Sai Baba and went to Prashanthi Nilayam. To Mrs. Bhatt, he said, "I spoke to you long ago, 20 years ago." Greatly puzzled, she replied, "No, Swami, this is my first visit." "Yes, yes, but I came to you when you were living in Mysore," and he mentioned the name of the street and the city where she was living at the time of her cancer illness, when she had the vision of Subramanyam. Then he took her a little way up the narrow winding stairs, which led to his quarters above, and told her to look down. Immediately, she was reminded of the staircase leading down from the heights on which she had been with Subramanyam. In fact, the two stairways seemed identical. She was more bewildered than ever. To help her understanding, Swami now waved his hand and from the air produced a photograph of himself in the Soma Sutra chariot of Subramanyam with a cobra circling around him. Now a light began to dawn on her. God can take any form, she thought. He had come to her 20 years before in the form she worshipped, Subramanyam. Now he was here before her in the form of Satya Sai Baba. She fell at his feet, weeping tears of joy.
The ways of the divine are mysterious. But something even more mysterious occurred in the life of Mr. C. Ramachandran of Pune. He was the chief inspector of military explosives in the Ministry of Defense and had taken to visiting the Sai Baba Shrine at Shirdi since he had a lot of family worries. Here is what Mr. Ramachandran told the author about his journey to Sai.
"Some years earlier, he told me he had had a lot of family worries and as a result had taken to visiting the Sai Baba Shrine at Shirdi, about 120 miles from his home. This had brought him great peace of mind and he had gradually become a devotee of Shirdi Baba. Eventually, he heard that this great saint had reincarnated at Puttaparthi and was known as Satya Sai Baba. Well, he thought, probably just another impostor, one of the many who have tried to make money by masquerading as the grand old Sai Baba reborn. A little later, however, he read in the newspapers an account of how Satya Sai Baba had relieved one of his followers of a bad stroke by taking it on himself and then cured his own paralysis before a large crowd on a Guru Purnima day. This gave him the feeling that Puttaparthi Baba must at least be a genuine holy man, perhaps a real Mahatma. When one of his family members brought a small photo of Satya Sai Baba and put it in the puja room in his house, Ramachandran let it be. 2 or 3 days later, he noticed that some ash had formed on the photo. He wiped it clean, but then once during the puja ceremony, he saw the ash actually forming on the photo. It appeared first like steam and turned into drops of milky liquid which ran down the glass and dried into grey ash. Perhaps, he thought, this might be due to something peculiar in the glass or in the cardboard backing or the frame. As a chemist, he tested these, but they were quite normal. However, he decided to change them all. Nevertheless, the ash continued to make its inexplicable appearance on the new glass and frame. One day, a young friend brought another photo of Satya Sai. This was stuck into cardboard without any glass front. With Ramachandran's permission, he put it among the other pictures in the puja room and went off. But before he had reached the front gate, Ramachandran called him back. The young man's eyes widened as he saw the ash forming on the photo he had just brought. "I did not really trust your story before," he confessed, "but now I see it is true." These events made Mr. Ramachandran decide to go to Prashanthi Nilayam and see Satya Sai Baba. Sometime after making this decision, he suddenly felt himself disgusted with the habit of cigarette smoking. One day, throwing away a cigarette, he vowed to himself that he would not smoke again until after he had had an interview with Sai Baba. His holidays fell due about 6 weeks later, in June 1964, and he used the opportunity to make his first trip to the ashram. The discomforts and lack of facilities there upset him initially, but he stayed on, and after some days found himself in an interview room along with a few other people waiting for the great man. Presently Baba came in and with his creative hand wave produced vibhuti. He gave some of this to all present except C. Ramachandran. The latter was very disappointed at being overlooked and asked for some. Baba looked at him and said, "I gave you some not long ago." Ramachandran was puzzled, and then he understood that Baba referred to the ash which had appeared on the photos. Swami smiled gently and went on, "Don't worry, I will be giving you a great deal, a very great deal, but don't go back to that bad old habit." Ramachandran knew that he referred to the smoking habit. A thrill went through his nerves as he realized how much this great man seemed to know about his life and thoughts.
But what happened when he received a strange telegram at his home in Pune, which read, quote, "Satya Sai Baba arriving at your residence May 5th to perform Upanayanam and give Brahmopadesham," unquote.
Ramachandran was very startled. This referred to the threat ceremony for his two sons, which was long overdue as his eldest son Raja was already 17 and a half. Well, was Baba really coming? Such a thing had never been mooted, and Ramachandran felt he was not worthy of the great honor. Certainly, he had no idea whatever about the correct way to receive such a great and holy saint. First, however, he must check to see if the message was really a genuine one. With the help of some of his office staff, he traced the telegram back to its origin. He found that it had been lodged at the main Pune post office and delivered to him from the suburban post office of Khirki. The receiving clerk at the Pune office had reason to remember the sender of this telegram. He was, he said, a man with a small beard. He had driven up in a taxi, which he kept waiting while he wrote the telegram. When the clerk asked for his address, the bearded man replied that he was in transit and had no address in Pune. The clerk said that he must therefore write his permanent address on the form. After some hesitation, the man wrote, "All India Sai Samaj, Madras." Then he drove off. This Sai Samaj was founded some years ago by Swami Narasimha, who wrote The Life of Sai Baba of Shirdi. The center is dedicated primarily to the dissemination of the teachings of the old Shirdi saint. On investigation, it was found that the bearded traveler was unknown to anyone at this place. So there, Ramachandran's detective work reached a dead end. He had been told that Swami was at Vrindavanam and took the precaution of sending a telegram there asking for confirmation of the date of the intended visit. He repeated the same request in a further telegram to Mr. Kasturi at Prashanthi Nilayam. No reply came from either of them. Later he learned that Kasturi had never received the telegram. "So I did not know what to expect on May 5th, Ramachandran told me, "but I thought it best to prepare everything for the ceremony and say nothing to anyone about the possibility of Baba coming." One problem, he said, was that he did not have enough ready cash for the function. But going to his bank to see what could be done, he found to his surprise that a sum of 468 rupees had mysteriously appeared to the credit of his account. He was not able to trace the origin of this, and in fact never succeeded in doing so. But it certainly was a great help to him. He decided to ask only his relatives and very close friends to come to the ceremony, which would mean providing lunch for about 50 people. Some days before the function was due, friends and even strangers started asking him if it was true that Sai Baba was coming to his house. All I could do, he told me, was to give some non-committal answer and try to put them off. Nevertheless, on the morning of May 5th, people began arriving at an early hour to take up a position in Ramachandran's large garden. As the hot morning wore on, the crowd grew larger until there must have been about 1,000 people sitting in neat rows awaiting the arrival of Sai Baba. All seemed quite certain that he was coming, the only point in doubt being how he would come and from what direction. Inside the house, Ramachandran and his wife were working hard and praying hard that everything would be in order when and if Swami arrived. There were flowers and decorations and all the necessary accoutrements for the ceremony. On a dais, they placed their best armchair, covered it with a satin cloth, and placed flowers on each arm. This was the seat of honor for Swami. The clock hands moved on, shadows in the garden shortened, but there were no signs of the Guru's arrival. At about 11 in the morning, Ramachandran entered his puja room, made a special prayer for guidance, and then conducted the thread ceremony himself. Immediately afterwards, he saw a little boy of about 8 years, a complete stranger among the people inside the house. The boy seemed to know the hostess, Mrs. Ramachandran, for he went to her and, saying that he was an orphan, asked for food. She gave him some, but was surprised to see him eat only a few mouthfuls and walk away. When she looked again for him, he was gone. None saw him go, but he could not be found. It was as if he had melted into the air, and who was he anyway? He did not belong to the neighborhood, and none of their friends had ever seen him before. Soon after this, it was observed that there was an imprint on the satin cover of Baba's chair, as if someone had been sitting there. Also, the flowers on one arm were crushed, as if a hand had rested on them. Yet no one could have sat on that chair in its prominent position on the dais without being seen. Besides, no one there in the house would have presumed to sit on the chair placed there, as all knew, for the great saint. The Indian followers of Sai Baba, with their strong feelings of veneration and bhakti, would never dream of doing such a thing, even if it could have been done unobserved. Anyway, the conviction grew that Sai Baba had himself been present in the astral or subtle body and had purposely left these marks to let them know of his visit. This conviction was strengthened in Ramachandran's mind when his eldest son Raja confided something to him. As part of the thread ceremony, a boy receives a mantra from the one performing the ritual, while both kneel with a cloth covering their heads. In this case, of course, it was the father, Ramachandran, who gave the mantra. But Raja said that he had seen, while under the cloth, not his father's face, but that of Sai Baba, which he knew well from photographs. Suddenly something had impressed Raja greatly, for after that day, his father said, the boy's character changed completely. He no longer wasted his time on frivolous pursuits, such as loitering in the bazaars, but concentrated fully on his studies. After the ceremony came the lunch, but the wrong impression seemed to have got around that everyone present was to be fed. They began coming in from the garden in batches, filing past the chair to see the miraculous impressions on the satin and flowers, and then taking their places on the floor in the dining room. Mr. and Mrs. Ramachandran had some extra supplies of food in case of emergency. Though they had planned for 50, they probably had enough for about 100, he told me. So they decided to just go on feeding the crowd until supplies ran out. But incredibly, supplies did not run out, not until everyone had eaten his fill. We did not feed 10,000 like Christ, said Mr. Ramachandran, but there must have been at least 1,000. So the food was multiplied 10 times. Without question, it was one of Sai Baba's miracles. The Ramachandran story is not unique. Other devotees have had similar strange experiences. Many have at times of importance or crisis felt Baba's presence, caught glimpses of him, or been left with signs of an unseen visit. I have told Ramachandran's particular narrative here because the fact of his being a practical scientist with a responsible official position in the world may add some weight to his evidence for the skeptical mind.
Dear listeners, if you thought this was unbelievable, brace yourselves for more such incidents in the next installment of this chapter. In the following part, We'll continue with the latter half of this chapter and bring you to the story of a family in Chennai. This family was instrumental in building the Shirdi Baba temple in Guindy. But what events led them to build this temple? How did Swami take them through some of their most troubled times? To discover more amazing true life stories, do tune in to the second half of this chapter next week. Till then, all the best and Jai Sai Ram. You have been listening to a presentation of excerpts from Mr. Howard Murfitt's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. This book has been published in 1971 by Frederick Miller Limited in London.